Hello, I'm Linor Mudu. Welcome to Health Chat. Monkeypox is slowly making its way around the world. More than 300 suspected and confirmed cases of monkeypox have been reported in over 20 nations, mostly in Europe, according to the World Health Organization. Monkeypox is a viral zoonotic disease caused by the monkeypox virus and can be transmitted to humans by infected animals. The virus was first found in monkeys in 1958, but rodents are now seen as the main source of transmission. A usually mild illness, monkeypox spreads through close contact between people, which is rare. Monkeypox is in the smallpox family, but is less severe. Smallpox was eradicated by vaccination, and the smallpox vaccines have also been found to be effective in preventing monkeypox. Experts say so far, the current outbreak has shown no significant threat to life or the community that can result in severe disease or high case fatality rate. Take a listen.
The outbreak of monkeypox is raising alarm as it spreads around the world. Experts say the sudden appearance of monkeypox simultaneously in several non-endemic countries is unusual. However, the World Health Organization does not believe the current outbreak will lead to a pandemic. Rosamund Lewis is WHO's head of the Smallpox Secretariat, part of the organization's emergencies program.
So at the moment, we are not concerned of a global pandemic. However, we are, and that word would need to be defined in the context of an orthopox virus. We are concerned that individuals may acquire this infection through high-risk exposure if they don't have the information they need to protect themselves. And we are concerned that because the global population is not immune to orthopox viruses since the end of smallpox eradication, that the virus may attempt to exploit a niche and spread more easily between people. But we don't have the answers to this question yet.
Monkeypox is a viral disease that causes fever and a distinct bumpy rash. Most cases of monkeypox have been reported in Europe during the current outbreak. The United States, Australia, and Argentina are among countries that have also reported an outbreak. Scientists are looking into what might explain this upsurge in countries where the virus is not typically found. Experts say the sporadic monkeypox outbreaks are not unusual in Central and West African countries where the virus is endemic. The Nigeria Centers for Disease Control and Prevention has announced over 20 confirmed cases of monkeypox this year. The WHO says the current outbreak in several countries can likely be contained if countries act quickly. Justine Mullen-Kanzadian, VOA News, Washington.
Dr. Muidimi Ndosi is Associate Professor of Rheumatology Nursing at the School of Health and Social Wellbeing, University of the West England, Bristol. He tells us more about monkeypox and the current outbreak.
So this is a disease that is caused by an infection by a monkeypox virus. And this virus is very much similar to smallpox, although it's not the same virus. It was documented early in the 50s in DRC. It's not known to spread very easily amongst people, but it occurs when people come into contact with the animals that are infected. The incubation period is between 5 to 21 days, but before the symptoms begin, usually with monkeypox, it starts with swelling of lymph nodes, and that is not very common in smallpox. But after that, the symptoms like fever, headache, muscle ache, backache, chills, etc. may follow. And that is very similar to smallpox.
Are the monkeypox lesions so distinctive that people would go see a doctor to get them looked at? Or could they be so similar to others that patients may ignore them?
These are quite serious. They can go even to the soles of the feet. And when they developed, they can be itchy and painful. Treatment is mainly supportive. There's no cure. Usually the disease is supposed to be self-limiting. A few weeks, and then the lesions will dry off, the scab will fall off. Once the skin is intact, then this person is okay.
There is an outbreak of monkeypox currently in several countries around the world, Europe, America, Australia. What is your assessment of the situation and how concerned should we be?
It's not known to bring severe disease on adults, but we do not know that for children it may cause severe disease or for people who are immunocompromised. Therefore, it is important for people to report and to have this looked at so that we may be able to isolate or prevent transmitting to other people. That is helpful also to people who have been in contact with these people, because vaccination can be given even after contact with the infected person. A smallpox vaccine has been shown to be 85% effective against this virus. Therefore, although there's no treatment for it, when people know that they've been in contact with somebody with monkeypox, they can get vaccine, and the vaccine can protect them from getting the disease.
So what should be the goal of surveillance at this stage of the outbreak?
I think it is important just to be really watchful rather than worrying or being as concerned as well. And second, it's not a new virus. The only problem, this is the first outbreak outside Africa or involving a lot of other countries. And therefore, it is important to know what is happening. The key things for people to know how this is transmitted and how to identify the symptoms and how they can report them.
This is the first outbreak of monkeypox to involve some cases in various countries that are non-endemic. What do we know about the source of this outbreak?
Yes, we don't know much about the source. Here in the UK, Health Security Agency reported that the majority of cases were among the people who were gay or bisexual. There's an investigation to see where, how this happened. It's not a known sexually transmitted disease, but because it's transmitted through close contact, therefore it can be, we can say, sexually transmissible. We do not know actually the source of this current outbreak. What we need to know about the linkage of cases, perhaps, is just people who have close contact with other people. I think that's what has been driving this current outbreak. And I know health workers in London that saw some of the cases, some of the people that were infected, are isolating at home at the moment. They've been vaccinated. And that's all that can be done at the moment.
Dr. Mwidimi Ndosi, thank you so much. We appreciate your time.
Thank you.
That was Dr. Mwidimi Ndosi with the University of the West England in Bristol. Now, the Albinism Association of Nigeria is petitioning the government to resume free cancer treatment for albinos. The free treatment was stopped years ago because of a lack of funding. Experts say people with albinism are more likely to get skin cancer because they have little or no melanin. Timoteo Bizu reports from Abuja.
This rash on Cynthia Ukechi's skin can be deadly.
I have two or three on my neck. Yes, three on my neck. I have two at my back. And I just have this on my forehead here. It looks very small, but it's very painful and it can bleed.
Ukechi says sores are malignant skin cells capable of spreading and causing skin cancer that could be fatal. Ukechi says she first noticed the changes on her skin in 2018. She received treatment thanks to a government program that offered free skin cancer care for albinos. But now, she says her condition has returned and the government has ended its free treatment plan.
So noticing this issue again, I already know what it is, but I couldn't go back to the hospital knowing I'll be asked to pay. And the money is what I do not have. If the government wants me to leave, if the government wants persons with albinism to leave, they should reinstate the free cancer treatment.
Authorities started the program in 2007, and the Albinism Association of Nigeria says more than 5,000 patients, including Ukechi, benefited from it before it was discontinued. Jackie Epele is a skin cancer survivor and the group's president.
Even the current administration started a skeletal implementation at the beginning of their tenure, but then reneged. And the reason is simply that poverty of funds and the fact that they cannot continue to offer this treatment. And of course, the effect is that persons with albinism are dying in droves.
Medical experts say albinos are 1,000 times more likely than the general population to develop skin cancer due to the partial or complete absence of melanin, a pigment responsible for eye, hair, and skin color. In Nigeria, myths and discrimination associated with albinism make it far more difficult for those with the disorder to get jobs and afford skin cancer treatment. In May, the Albinism Association renewed its call for the government to reinstate the free skin cancer treatment. Nigerian authorities responded.
We had discussion with the permanent secretary of the Federal Ministry for Health for us to be able to revisit this. We're going to provide some funding support to do that. Additionally, by next year, we're going to provide proper budgetary allocation that will support this cancer treatment for our people.
The Albinism Association cautions there is no time to lose, as free treatment is the only lifeline for persons around the country like Ukachi, who fears she will run out of time. Timothy Obiezu for VOA News, Abuja, Nigeria.
Most sanitary pads available for African women and girls are relatively expensive and classified as single-use plastics, which means some take hundreds of years to decompose. To help tackle this environmental problem, a woman-led Kenyan enterprise has created a low-cost, biodegradable pad made from agricultural waste. Juma Majonga reports from Tika, Kenya.
From a distance, you might think that Mary Nyarwai is simply disposing of agricultural waste at her home in Thika, on the outskirts of Nairobi. But what she is actually doing is making biodegradable sanitary pads. After facing difficulties finding safe quality pads herself, Nyarwai thought of a solution using readily available raw materials.
Maize is a staple in Africa. And this is waste. So I normally go and collect it from the market. And this is also waste. These leaves, pineapple leaves are waste. So I also collect them from the farms. So when you combine that two, you make a very beautiful pad that is soft and also absorbs, it gives, delivers on comfort and also absorption, and it's also sustainable, which is a very brilliant thing.
Once collected, these agricultural wastes undergo rigorous processes to break down the natural fibers and mold the raw materials into biodegradable sanitary pads. Nyarwai's company is called Nyungu Africa, loosely translated to Womb of Africa. Her pads are getting good reviews.
The difference was quite significant. It felt like I was sitting on clouds because the material is very different. Her pads are very soft. The absorbency is good. It becomes really quite a lifesaver for yourself.
In 2019, there was a widespread outcry on Kenyan social media questioning the quality of some pads on the market. Kenya's health ministry says it is attempting to maintain quality standards for the sanitary pads produced and sold in Kenya to protect consumers as well as the environment.
The strategy was broadly looking at sanitation being a person-friendly issue. Now, the bigger thing or the new thing in that strategy is that we were looking at empowering the individuals to be able to act.
Nyarwai hopes her innovation can help Kenyan women not only with their health, but also with their financial well-being.
Period poverty is a global crisis, but because Africa has a very large population of women who are marginalized and underserved, this is where period poverty really eats our women. This is a very, it's a makeshift small industry. So it is possible to be replicated in very many areas, just to train the women how to, you know, pick the right raw materials and to process them and then to make the pads.
And best of all, the pads are not made of plastic, which means they do no harm to the environment. Juma Majanga for VOA News, Thika, Kenya.
You are listening to Health Chat on Voice of America. It is time for a short break. Don't go away. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Health Chat. Recently, 11 babies died in a hospital fire in Senegal. Parents struggle to cope with the tragedy while authorities look for answers.
In April 2021, four newborns died at a fire at a hospital in the northern city of Linguère. The town's mayor said the blaze was sparked by an electrical malfunction of an air conditioning unit. 6 months later, a baby at a Dakar hospital burned to death after being left in an incubator. Just 2 months ago, a 9 months pregnant woman sought emergency care at a hospital in the city of Louga. She was denied a C-section because the appointment was not scheduled and died 20 hours later. The babies that were killed in Wednesday's blaze were being kept under a special light meant to treat jaundice, which is a common condition among preterm babies. Amina Toussar is the Senegal country director for a nonprofit, the Program for Appropriate Technology in Health, or PATH. The main problem behind the incident, she said, is a lack of maintenance.
And these tragedies will happen again and again, unfortunately, until we really understand that it is not a matter of people or how much money, how much expensive equipment we put in the health facilities. If we are not able to provide electricity correctly to maintain this equipment.
In Senegal, many women are wary of hospitals and prefer to give birth at home. But the expansion of healthcare facilities to rural areas, coupled with educational efforts, has led to significant improvements. Over the last 25 years, the number of women giving birth in health facilities increased from 47% to 80%. During that time, infant mortality dropped from 138 deaths per 1,000 births to 38 deaths per 1,000 births today. Incidents such as Wednesday's fire have the potential to hinder progress, Sar said, particularly since they are amplified on social media. The fire was caused by a short circuit. Ousmane Dia is the director of public health facilities with Senegal's Ministry of Health. What we can say, he says, is that there was a technical failure because there was a short circuit. And in all systems, adverse events can happen. There could be a number of origins, he says. Sometimes at hospitals, you see people plug in their tea kettle or their phones, and that can cause malfunctions. In response to the tragedy, Senegalese President Macky Sall announced 3 days of national mourning and ousted Health Minister Abdoulaye Diouf Sarr. Dia said Sarr had done extraordinary work as health minister, particularly in regard to Senegal's COVID-19 response, and thanked him for his service. PATH's Aminatou Sarr said the move was a good sign the government was taking the problem seriously, but that it doesn't solve the larger issue. President Sall is expected to visit mourning families in Tivo on Saturday. Annika Hammerschlag for VOA News, Dakar, Senegal.
In Ghana, sexual assault victims must show medical reports to prove they have been assaulted before a rape suspect can be prosecuted. These medical examinations come at a relatively high cost and are not covered by the National Health Insurance, and so can deter a victim from pressing charges. Now, a lawmaker is seeking to abolish the health exam requirement so that more women can pursue justice. Sinanu Todd reports from Bator, Ghana.
The Achem family has 3 daughters who live together in the North Town district of Ghana. Earlier this month, the youngest of the three, a 15-year-old, was abducted and raped. She said a strange man on bike said he was a pastor who wanted to pray for her. He dragged her with a handkerchief and took her to a hotel room. She says at the hotel, he showed her a picture of a 14-year-old girl on his phone and told her he had killed the girl in the picture because she refused to let him have sex with her. He then threatened to kill her if she resisted. He hit her chest with a pistol, tried to choke her and beat her up so her entire face was swollen. She was discharged from the hospital after 7 days and is scheduled for checkups for the next 6 months. Her doctor, Dr. Bernard Atubuga, says the costs are not covered by the National Health Insurance Program, the NHIS.
As long as it is defilement or rape or sexual assault review, health insurance doesn't cover. So whatever investigations that you perform, then the patient would have to pay from either he saw a packet or get the money from elsewhere.
An NHIS official tells VOA the insurance program does not consider sexual assault a health issue, but a criminal issue instead. But the Member of Parliament for the North Tongue constituency, Samuel Okudjeto Ablakwa, says this is an injustice, and this man told local hospitals in his constituency to stop charging examination fees for sexual assault victims. Instead, his office will pay the fees.
I'm showing that in one constituency it is possible. We have abolished this, and so we can now scale it up. The next phase, I'm talking to a number of colleagues to team up with me so that we draft a private member's bill so that we will outlaw those charges.
A 2020 UNICEF study found that the cost of seeking justice for sexual assault in Ghana can cost from 10% to 55% of a household's income, a major factor deterring many victims from coming forward. Parliament member Ablakwa says his goal is to make it easy for victims to seek justice and the perpetrators to be duly punished.
No matter your status, no matter who you are, no matter how much money you think you have, this is a crime that will be punished, and that we have a zero tolerance policy from henceforth.
Once the new measures are in place, the Achem family hopes they will be able to press charges against their daughter's attacker. Sena Anutod for VOA News, Bashop, Ghana.
Police in Cameroon say they have freed 70 children from an illegal disciplinary camp in the north, where the children say they were left by their parents to be chained and beaten. Authorities say camp workers have been detained and the sick and traumatized children are being treated at a hospital.
Cameroon police say they entered an illegal disciplinary camp known locally as a traditional rehabilitation center for wayward children in the city of Ngaoundéré. Police said they freed 70 boys and girls, 6 to 14 years old, Tuesday, with many limping as a result of torture and others with fresh wounds. Among the freed children is 14-year-old Alim Idrisu, who says when he refused to attend a Quranic school in March 2020, his parents accused him of having a lack of respect for community rules and elders, and took him to the center. He says God saved his life and gave him courage to bear the gruesome torture inflicted on him by workers of the center. He says he spent the first of his 2 years in the camp with his feet chained. Idrisu says each child was served a poorly cooked meal each day, and anyone who complained was beaten by the camp's guards. Speaking on local media, Idrisu said each time the few toilets in the camp were occupied, workers forced children to defecate in plastic bags and urinate in bottles. He says older boys were escorted to empty the feces and urine in a nearby stream at night. The freed children said four of their peers died of torture and starvation within the past 3 months, and they do not know where their bodies were buried. Police acknowledged that a few children died. The government says it is still trying to identify their parents. Kildadi Tageke Buka is the governor of Cameroon's Adamawa region, where Ngaoundéré is located. He says he ordered children who looked tired and frail to be rushed to local hospitals. Buka says he has asked police to locate parents of the freed children so the parents can answer to charges that will include child abuse and negligence.
Nous appelons les autorités d'abord, étatiques, les chefs traditionnels.
Buka says he has ordered local government officials, clerics, elites, community leaders and village chiefs to help put a stop to this form of primitiveness and torture by reporting promoters of such disciplinary camps to the police. He says parents who sent their children to such camps will be punished according to Cameroon law. He says Cameroon is a state of laws and its citizens must respect human rights or face the consequences. Owners of the camp and its workers have been arrested by police. The camp owners are to be charged with torture, homicide, illegal detention, and child abuse. Rights groups like the Yaoundé Headquartered Center for Religious Studies and some Muslim groups like the Council of Imams and Muslim Dignitaries of Cameroon have previously criticized what they call the proliferation of Islamic dissidentiary camps in Cameroon. The government says even though such camps were prohibited in 2017, many are hidden within communities and operate illegally. The government says it will locate and close such centers and educate parents about the abuses committed there. Moki Edwin Kinzuka for VOA News, Yaoundé, Cameroon.
The persistent drought drying out the Horn of Africa is a reflection of severe weather intensified by climate change. For Ethiopia's pastoralists, who have seen more than a million livestock perish, it is a signal their way of life cannot be sustained by the next generation. Linda Givatash reports from Godi, Ethiopia.
It's become an all-too-familiar sight in Ethiopia. Despite a last-ditch effort to feed her cattle with grass from her thatch roof, Addis Ahmed Omar says they all perished. Her family is now among the 7.2 million Ethiopians who are not getting enough to eat, according to the United Nations.
When I was young, drought came, and we coped and survived with it. But this current drought is continuous and recurrent. It's more than we can manage.
These events aren't just lasting longer, they're becoming more frequent. Some of the former pastoralists at this displacement camp lost their livestock in 2017. They've become permanent residents of the area, having abandoned their nomadic lifestyle to instead rear small animals like goats and grow produce.
It is better to look for other livelihoods rather than pastoralism. Education and other livelihoods like farming. Mixed farming is another option.
Climate change is projected to bring even more extreme conditions in the years to come, with contrasting droughts and floods. That will also contribute to soil erosion and degradation, shrinking the available land for pasture. Within this year, experts say there's a 61% chance the region's next rainy season will fail, devastating even more pastoralists.
It is very challenging for them to continue the same way of life, depending on just natural resources. So the future is not bright, unfortunately to say. But that's where they need to adapt to the new climate condition.
In the northern Afar region, pastoralists say they shouldn't have to abandon their tradition. Instead, they want more support from government for protecting grazing land and to develop programs to provide emergency feed and medication for livestock.
Afar have this wealth of traditional knowledge, this wealth of what to do when it's too dry, there's no water, this wealth of how to look after their herd. But politics doesn't allow them.
At a clinic 100 kilometers from Afar's capital of Samara, Biru Ali, a pastoralist mother, is not as optimistic. Surviving on just bread and rations of water trucked in by aid groups, she says her two-year-old is now sick with diarrhea.
I don't want my daughter to do the same. Education.
While many say they would welcome an alternative future for their children, now faced with hunger, their focus is on simply surviving today. Linda Giftash for VOA News, Godé, Ethiopia.
That's all for this edition of Health Chat. For the latest news and coverage on the coronavirus pandemic, visit voanews.com or you can visit voaafrica.com. Thank you all for joining us, and special thanks to all our affiliate stations throughout Africa for carrying Health Chat. I'm your host, Lino Khmudu, in Washington, with producer Dan Brown. Until next time, take care, stay safe, and strive to make every day a healthy day.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
Hello, I'm VOA health correspondent Lino Khmudu.
The World Health Organization and Africa Centers for Disease Control say we all can help fight the global pandemic by frequently washing our hands or using hand sanitizers. For more information on protecting yourself and others, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa CDC. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest on COVID-19.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.